Welcome to Stateside on this unusually warm, foggy day, at least here in Ann Arbor. I'm Cynthia Canty. It was on this day in 1990 that Jack Kevorkian was first charged with murder. We'll look back at the man and the controversy he inspired. Also on today's show, Chrysler, Ford, and General Motors all saw their November sales increase. But what about the world's largest car market, China? We'll check in on auto sales there and what they mean for the domestic auto industry. But first, let's turn to some very big changes that could be on the horizon for public schools in Michigan. A group assembled by Governor Snyder has served up recommendations that are summed up by the slogan, "Anytime, any place, any way, and any pace." A coordinated series of draft and introduced bills could reshape public education in our state, not only giving students many more options, but changing education funding in Michigan. Let's take a close look now as we talk with Jeff Williams of Public Sector Consultants and from MLive, reporter Tim Martin, who's been covering the school reform movement extensively. Welcome to both of you. Jeff, can you start out by digging deeper for us? Explain what any time, any place, any way, and any pace would actually mean for students in Michigan?
Well, we call them collectively the Anys, and it's a way to kind of open up the school experience for students. And the concept is that just like students have access to cell phones or computers, or if they go to the library, you know, thousands of books, they're learning outside of the traditional kind of 8:15 to 3 p.m. environment. This would open them to learning in an organized fashion at any time, in any place, in any method. Another way to think of it is this is saying that if a student learns math best via a computer, and that same student learns English best in a small discussion group, and that same student learns biology best in a classroom with 25 peers, that's exactly what could happen. It would really tailor the learning to each student's style.
I could only imagine that this would be extraordinarily difficult for school administrators and teachers to put a program like this together. How would you keep track of where a kid is and what this kid's doing?
Well, in some ways, this is, if you think of the best teachers you had growing up or in college or any post-secondary education, the very best teachers do this kind of learning right now, today, and have done for the last 50 years. They really match how they teach to the individual student. The challenge is, in today's world with shrinking budgets for schools and an increased number of children per classroom and higher standards, kind of teachers are getting squeezed. They don't feel as professionals they have enough time to do it anymore. We also have new tools. We have these wonderful online tools that, when deployed correctly, can really help student learning that didn't exist 10 and 15 and 20 years ago.
Tim Martin from MLive, as you are covering this story, what are you hearing from the many voices involved in this dialogue of education reform? Who is excited and in favor of it?
Folks in favor of it, I think, tend to be people who now offer alternatives to the traditional K-12 school districts, maybe charter school providers. Those sorts of folks seem to be the most fired up about the proposals at this time.
And opposed? I know we just saw a big letter from 72 school superintendents from West Michigan signing that open letter to Governor Snyder in the state warning reforms are untested and unproven. Talk about what you're hearing from critics.
Exactly that. Some of the traditional K-12 school districts and the organizations that represent them do seem to be feeling that these proposed changes are coming too fast and that these proposed changes may be too sweeping. Part of that debate, I think, is financial. A lot of school districts in the state have already been feeling some financial pressures given some cuts that have been made in recent years. And I think they're worried about the model to some extent. They are worried that some of this is unproven, untested, but they're also worried about what it might mean for them from a financial standpoint.
In fact, I'd like both of you now to help us kind of drill down more. There's a draft document written by Richard McClellan that would really, really overhaul the state's school funding law. Can you give us kind of a sense of what that's about, Jeff?
Michigan's school laws are really in two big sections. There's one called the school code. That's kind of the rules and regulations of how the school operates. And then there's the school aid act. That's how schools receive money to pay for all the rules and regulations. So the aid act is what Richard and others have taken a look at. the concept is to break apart this what's called the foundation allowance. It's roughly the $7,000 or so dollars that every school gets for each student in their enrollment. Right now, for example, the kind of the gatekeeper, the way that a student would access an online class, the school is really in control. So if you picture two school districts right next to each other,
okay.
In District A, the superintendent or that building principal may be very permissive, may encourage students to enroll in online classes, and therefore it's not a problem. In District B, they may be very restrictive and say, no, no, you live in District B. We don't approve online courses that don't come from ourselves or from our ISD, so that student would be shut out of online learning. This rewrite would say that money kind of follows the student and belongs really to the parent, meaning if the parent said, I want my student to be in class for 5 hours a day and to take 2 hours outside of the traditional school environment from an online or from a charter for the next district over, then the school district would get 5/7 of the money and the other providers would be entitled to their portion. So instead of a kind of a really, you know, district by district, administrator by administrator negotiation, this would completely change the framework to say if a student takes 1 hour of class from you as a provider, you are entitled to 1 hour of that aid allowance to pay for that student.
What's in there to kind of make life a little easier for these administrators?
Well, unfortunately, there's not much in here to make life really easier for the administrators. But this is a really interesting debate because if Michigan does nothing, if we do absolutely nothing, we don't open the Aid Act, we don't reauthorize the EA, we do absolutely nothing on these bills, the world will still change. Meaning 5 years from now, more Michigan students will be getting an education online. 5 years from now, there will be huge pressure on underperforming districts to improve. So it's not a question of whether the reforms will come, and it's not a question of whether online learning works or not. It's a question of when. And the when is measured in matters of years. I don't think it's mattered in measures of decades, meaning this is going to happen one way or the other in the next 10 years. As a parent myself of a third grader, you know, I've done education policy for 20 years, and now I have actually someone in the public school system. This, you know, by the time my son graduates from high school, I do not expect him to be in a high school for 4 years, in a building with four walls and a ceiling and a roof.
Wow.
I expect that when my son is in high school, he will spend a substantial portion of his day doing something that to me looks nothing like my high school experience, whether that's transferring between districts, whether that's taking things online, whether that's work experience. I don't know what it looks like. But as a policy professional and looking at the pace of change, I am convinced this is going to happen in Michigan no matter what over the next 10 years.
And is this going to be seen nationally, or do you see Michigan leading the way in these huge reforms?
Well, and this is a great story in Michigan where it's we have a collective memory and then we have reality. Our collective memory is we have been a leader in the past. We have an organization called the Michigan Virtual University. We also have GenNet out of the Genesee ISD. We have two very strong and nationally leading organizations in online learning here in the state. So our collective memory is, when we think about it, oh, we're a national leader. Here's the reality. Tens of thousands of students in Michigan take advantage of online learning. In the two states in the nation with the highest proportion of online learning, hundreds of thousands of students today in each of those states take advantage of online learning. So where we have as a state over the last 10 or 15 years, we have led, we are at the vanguard, we're still in the top five nationally in terms of the proliferation of distance learning, we are not moving as fast as the fastest states in the nation who have hundreds of thousands of students and similar sized populations today.
If you're just joining us, this is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty here on Michigan Radio, and we're talking about impending reforms in public education in Michigan as we talk with Jeff Williams of Public Sector Consultants and from MLive, reporter Tim Martin, who's been covering the school reform movement extensively. Tim, I think a lot of what is confusing is that there are many, many voices involved in this dialogue. Can you give us some background as to the politics behind this push for education reform?
Well, I think there's been a push for faster, more dramatic change in our education system now for quite a few years. I think on the choice side, it really came to a head when Republicans were basically put in a position where they, in theory, can do something about it. We have a Republican governor who clearly wants to force some change to improve schools. He has a legislature that has Republican majorities in both the House and the Senate. So part of the reason, a big part of the reason this is coming up now is because there are the numbers there in the legislature to, in theory, get it done. I think there's been people that have been pushing for this for years and years and years, but there just really hasn't been the folks in office that might advance it at a quick pace the way there is now.
So in a sense, the table's set.
The table is set, but by no means is this table a clean table, if that makes sense. It's a tough issue that I think a lot of lawmakers, Republicans included, are struggling with to try and determine exactly how this can be done without upsetting the apple cart too much, but still making enough change to make a significant difference for the kids in the school districts that need change.
We're talking with Tim Martin, a reporter with MLive, who's been covering the school reform movement in Michigan, and Jeff Williams of Public Sector Consultants. We'll continue our conversation on the future of public education in our state right after a break. And also still to come, news of a name change for a luxury Ford brand. We'll ask what really is behind all of that in 20 minutes. And of course, we always love connecting with you. You can find us online at michiganradio.org. On Facebook, all you have to do is search for Stateside with Cynthia Canty, and on Twitter at Stateside Radio. This is Michigan Radio, and you're listening to Stateside. This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Continuing our look now at what changes are on the horizon for public schools in Michigan. Jeff Williams of Public Sector Consultants is with us, and from MLive, reporter Tim Martin. Jeff, give us a look at the state of education in Michigan right now. How much need is there for reform?
One of the biggest problems is there's not a shared narrative in Michigan right now about what's going on with our schools. Right, so we've got this disconnect. People don't understand. I'm looking at the latest statewide numbers. One in every four Michigan high school graduates is prepared for college or career, measured at the national standard.
Wow.
Scary.
One in four.
Scary.
So for the folks that are really against it, meaning they don't like this proposal, they're operating from the sense of, yes, but in my district or overall, you know, 70% of our kids go to college. That's great that 70% go to college. 17% are prepared to be there. So if you just look at my school data and go to the governor's dashboard, the other one that always gets me, the statewide four-year graduation rate is 76%, and our dropout rate is 11. If you add those two numbers together really quickly, you don't get 100.
Huh.
Meaning between 1 in 10 and 1 in 6 Michigan 18-year-olds doesn't graduate in 4 years from high school and doesn't drop out. Now, as a state, are we comfortable with saying between 1 in every 10 and 1 in every 6 kids kind of gets lost leaving high school? There is a clear need for reform. So kind of we have a big education problem in Michigan, and the scary part is we're average nationally. So it's not like we're worse than others. This is a national problem. We have the chance in Michigan to really kind of put the pedal to the metal and fix some of this, or we're really going to be hurting in 20 years when 1 in 10 kids didn't really make it out of high school.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. Another issue that was the whole local control issue. You know, Michigan's got a long history of folks being used to having control over their own school districts, you know, whether you count that as 550 or 800 something. And these proposals change some of that. You could argue that it changes some of that for good reason, because some of those schools that are failing under local control, well, then what do? You know, you got to do something.
Michigan's Board of Education President John Austin's calling these reforms, in his words, a nuclear bomb. Talk to me about that.
There are a lot of people in that boat, not just John Austin, that feel that way. Administrators, unions, pretty much most of the folks in K-12 districts, as we knew them and grew up with them, are nervous about this kind of thing, because, as Jeff mentioned, they just don't know what this is going to look like 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road. Change scares people. So I think what the lawmakers are trying to do right now is figure out, well, how much change can we make without really scaring people? That's part of the debate that's going on right now, I think.
I think it's interesting, too, you referenced the letter this morning from the 71 West Michigan school chiefs. Contrast that with Board President Austin's public comments to date, where President Austin has said, you know, this is a nuclear attack. This is, well, you know, this dismantles the existing public school system. That's kind of way to one extreme. The third paragraph of the letter from the school chiefs this morning said, Michigan needs a reform strategy that recognizes and celebrates our strengths, exposes our weaknesses, and addresses gaps in a way that does not destabilize structures that are working. We need a reform strategy that is efficient, effective, and economical. I just note, again, as a policy observer, they still, you know, they're very much against it. They don't like the way these bills are headed. But here are 71 school chiefs who in an open letter have said, we need reform. Reform is coming. Let's talk about the type of reform. So even within the opposition, you're starting to see kind of the initial gut reactions. And I think from President Austin, you saw that kind of initial gut, this is terrible reaction. And now a week removed from that draft, you're starting to see some people in the education profession who are still very opposed to the bills as presented, saying we must have this conversation and this conversation must happen now.
Jeff, that's a fantastic point. I don't think you're going to find a very high percentage of people at all who are saying we don't need change. People, I think, agree we need change. The question is going to be how much, how fast, and what methods do you use to get there?
We're talking with MLive reporter Tim Martin and Jeff Williams of Public Sector Consultants about really impending reforms in public education in Michigan. Let me ask you a what if. What about kids who do not have a laptop at home? The schools don't have the resources that other districts may have to get kids online, or they physically can't get to better schools and districts. Would this make the playing field more uneven for underprivileged kids?
That is definitely part of the concern, that you'd be setting up a system where folks that have more and folks that don't have less.
With the asterisk that right now in the state of Michigan, there is an area of below average income that has phenomenal parental exercising of choice. And it's the charter schools in Detroit, in and around Detroit Public Schools. So this argument that somehow people with lower than average education, people with lower than average income won't be able to take advantage of choice ignores the choices that have really changed the enrollment of Detroit Public Schools over the last 10 years. And there's a huge number of charter schools. So we need to kind of separate out. There's a difference between not being able to exercise the choice, which I think is false, and not having a high-quality series of choices to pick from, which I think there, again, it gets us back to that quality argument, that just because you can choose doesn't mean that your options are of higher quality.
And I think there are some pieces of this plan, too, that would call to try and address that issue of access. There would be perhaps more opportunities for organizations, companies to become more involved in certain aspects of education, and perhaps some of those models help kids get access to technology, to computers and internet access that they might not otherwise have.
I'm going to ask you both, can we say, speaking of access, can we truly say that every parent who wants to see their child put into a charter school, that there is a place in a charter school for that child? Are there kids who are slipping through the cracks, who can't get into that better charter school?
I think the latter. There are clearly students in Michigan today slipping through the cracks and don't have a quality public education, be it traditional district or charter school or even some of the private schools. There are areas of the state that are hugely in need of improved education. That, again, gets us back to the quality and it gets us back to equity of funding and it gets us back into something that these bills don't address, which is capital, meaning we have some wonderful buildings in our urban areas that are too big in the sense of the student population doesn't support it anymore and in the wrong place. And by that, I mean the building was built 50 years ago where lots of people in the city lived around that building. If that city built a new high school today, it wouldn't be on that plot of land.
Right.
It would be somewhere. It would be 2 miles down the road, still in the city, same district. I'm not talking about moving a building to the suburb. I'm just talking about the buildings are not where people live in some of our major urban areas. And, you know, again, as a policy person, unfortunately, once again, here's another major rewrite of education that does nothing on the capital side. And that's disappointing.
Tim, when do you expect to see any movement on all of these proposals? There's a lot of talk, a lot of proposals being written. When do you think we might see movement?
Oh, you ask a fantastic question, which I wish I knew the specific answer to. I can tell you the one piece that might get taken up within the next couple of weeks would be related to the Education Achievement Authority, which is now a district that includes only 15 Detroit schools. In theory, if that gets put into state law, it could expand to include many of the lowest achieving 5% schools throughout the state. That is the piece that, if anything is going to happen within the next couple of weeks, that would be the piece that's going to happen. It looks like most of it is going to be pushed into 2013 at this point.
And what do either of you think would happen? I know Detroit school leaders are making noises about pulling Detroit schools out and breaking the agreement with Eastern Michigan University. What do you think would happen to the EAA if that comes true?
I think the only certainty regarding the EAA at this time, whether the bills pass or don't pass, is lawsuits. This is headed to the court to, even if the bill is passed, to clarify the powers of the EAA, to clarify whether you can leave the EAA. I mean, I think we're headed to the courts no matter what, which is a shame because, you know, we're 9 months away from the start of the next school year. We're 9 months away from 1.5 million Michigan school children going into a school district for whatever the next academic year is. This is a massive system, millions of children and billions of dollars, and it has a hard start date every year of the first day after Labor Day. So there's not really breathing room in here. There's not kind of time where we can say, well, let's let this play out in the courts for the next 1 to 5 years. We have 9 months before the people of Michigan expect 1.5 million kids to be in a chair in front of a highly qualified teacher, and the clock is ticking.
Jeff Williams from Public Sector Consultants and from MLive reporter Tim Martin, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.